चित्तं ज्ञानभ्रंशस्मृतिक्षये तदुरोधं कवया प्राहो आत्मा प्राणवमात्मनः। When one deviates from his original consciousness, he loses the capacity to remember his previous position or recognize his present one. When remembrance is lost, all knowledge acquired is based on a false foundation. When this occurs, learned scholars consider that the soul is lost. Purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. The living entity, or the soul, is ever existing and eternal. It cannot be lost. But learned scholars say that it is lost when actual knowledge is not working. That is the difference between animals and human beings. According to less intelligent philosophers, animals have no soul, but actually animals have souls. Due to the animals' gross ignorance, however, it appears that they have lost their souls. Without the soul, a body cannot move. That is the difference between a living body and a dead body. When the soul is out of the body is called dead. The soul is said to be lost when there is no proper knowledge exhibited. Our original consciousness is Krishna consciousness, because we are part and parcel of Krishna. When this consciousness is misguided, and one is put into the material atmosphere, which pollutes the original consciousness, one thinks that he is a product of the material elements. Thus one loses his real remembrance of his position as part and parcel of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, just as a man who sleeps forgets himself. In this way, when the activities of proper consciousness are checked, all the activities of the lost soul are performed on a false basis. At the present moment, human civilization is acting on a false platform of bodily identification. Therefore, it can be said that the people of the present age have lost their souls. And in this respect, they are no better than animals. Today we are reading from Canto 4 of Srimad Bhagavatam, Chapter 22. Entitled Prithu Maharaj's Meeting with the Kumaras, Text 31. When our beloved Guru Maharaj, Srila A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada, first came to the United States of America, he was interviewed by a reporter after some months. They asked, "Why have you come? We have our own religions. We have our own cultures.
Why have you come here?
Srila Prabhupada replied, I have come to remind you of what you have forgotten. That we are all part of Krishna. That our eternal nature is to serve Krishna and to love Krishna. It is the essence of all religions. Prabhupada said, I have not come to convert, I have come to enlighten. Spirituality is the process of reviving our original consciousness. It is not creating an artificial imposition upon the mind. It is awaking the sleeping state of the soul. Sleep means forgetfulness. When you are in the dreaming state of sleep, you forget where your body is at the present, and you're thinking you're somewhere else, doing something else. In the deep state of sleeping, you forget your own identity completely. Lord Chaitanya came with this message. Jeev jago, jeev jago. Gaura Chandra bole, kota nidra. You are sleeping. All of you are sleeping in the lap of Maya. Wake up, sleeping souls. Wake up. This is our condition. We have forgotten our real spiritual nature, our original consciousness. And therefore, everything we develop in our life is built upon a false foundation. This is what Bhagavatam says. And all knowledge is based on false foundation. Srila Prabhupada spoke at MIT, the Massachusetts Institute of Technology, which, believe it or not, is worldwide more highly respected than the Indian Institute of Technology. It's one of the top most respected colleges in the entire world. Prabhupada was giving a class in an auditorium with professors, graduate students, and so many staff members. And Prabhupada said that the foundation of all of your knowledge is wrong. Where is the department that teaches the nature of the soul, the nature of consciousness, and the purpose of life? If we do not understand these principles, then all of our knowledge is in the wrong direction. As soon as you forget that you are the eternal soul part of Krishna, then you think you're this body, you think you're this mind, and you think I am the controller, the proprietor, and the enjoyer. That is ignorance. It is illusion. And then everything we learn is in pursuit of that. If you think you are someone you're not, then everything you learn consequent to that is taking you further and further away. So Srila Prabhupada explained the educational institutions of the world today are teaching knowledge on a false foundation. Bhagavad Gita explains, Nashato vidyate bhavo nabhavo vidyate shata. The difference between what is truth and what is illusion. What is real and what is unreal. Whatever is unreal is temporary. It is subjected to the powers of time. It will diminish, it will dwindle, it will die. What is real is eternal. It has no beginning and has no end. The soul is eternal. To understand this world in relationship to the energy of the Lord means to see the eternality within everything. Material nature is eternal. But all of the manifestations within material nature are temporary. To understand a thing's relationship with its source, Om Purnam Adha Purnam Idam, is to understand reality. But to not understand a thing's relation with its origin or Krishna is illusion. We are not seeing reality. So here we find Srila Prabhupada is explaining to university professors, deans of students, graduate students, that because your foundation is false, it is temporary. It will crumble. And what happens to a building if the foundation crumbles? Can the building be sustained? The building is completely dependent on the integrity of the foundation. Any proper architect or construction engineer will know the importance of a strong foundation. Otherwise, everything looks very nice. But there is danger at every moment. So what Srila Prabhupada was urging the most educated people in the world to understand that you have forgotten to build a real foundation. A real foundation is a foundation based on eternal principles. Based on what is never lost, what never dies. That is the soul. If our foundation is I am this body and I am this mind, then all of our knowledge is illusion. It is not real. Yesterday, one learned Vaishnava was asking, how and why should we take materialistic information when we have the Shastras? We have everything in the Vedic literatures. A devotee can take even material information, material technology, material science, but if we understand clearly that we are the eternal servants of Krishna, and our constitutional position is to serve Krishna, then we could use those things in Krishna's service, then even material educational qualifications can actually be an ornament to our devotional service. However, if we begin to depend on material knowledge, or depend on those persons who are giving us material knowledge, if we do not see through proper perspective that this is actually ignorance, until it only becomes actual knowledge when it is used under the direction of Guru and Krishna. But the great tendency amongst people of this world, especially neophyte devotees in this regard, is after reading the scriptures, after being trained in the science of Krishna consciousness to some extent, when someone comes to teach us some material system or some material knowledge that could be helpful, we put more faith in that system, in that knowledge, than in Guru and Krishna. Then spiritually we're lost. We have to be very, very careful. When we're using anything material, we cannot be attached to that. We cannot take shelter of that. We cannot depend on that. It is only a device to be used for Krishna service. So the whole world is building its empires on the false foundation of the bodily conception of life. Like children who build their little castles in the sand and become very attached to their to the product of their hard work. But an adult knows that very soon the waves of the sea will destroy it. So similarly, the children of this world are building their vast castles in the sand of material illusion. And the wave of time will soon come and wash it away. In fact, our acharyas have gone to the extreme of calling material educational institutions spiritual slaughterhouses. Very strong statement. But we must understand it, not in a radical extreme way, but in a sensible way. If our educational system, through all the various sciences of knowledge, are reconfirming the misconception that you are the body, you are the proprietor, you are the enjoyer, you are the controller, then it is slaughtering your spiritual propensities. Therefore, there must be a very, very strong foundation of knowledge, real knowledge. This is the beginning of knowledge, who we are. This is how Krishna began Bhagavad Gita to Arjuna. Asochanan vasochastvam. Arjuna, you are a fool. Although speaking learned words, you are lamenting for that which is not worthy of grief. Dehino smenyata dehe komaram yovanam cha. The soul is eternal. Natvevaham jatunasam, natvam neme janada. Everyone on this battlefield, you, me, and all these kings, we have never begun and we will never cease to be. The soul is transmigrating in this body from boyhood to youth to old age, and similarly it will transmigrate into another body at death. That is the nature of the soul. It is unborn. It is undying. Similarly, when Sanatana Goswami approached Lord Chaitanya in Varanasi, he inquired, like Arjuna, with great humility, that I do not know anything. I am a fool. I do not know what is to be done and what is to be done. Please instruct me. And Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu began his teachings to Sanatana Goswami, Jivera Swarupoi Krishnera Nityadas, that you are the eternal servant of Krishna. You are the soul, part and parcel of Krishna. Mamayavam so jivaloke jivabhuta sanat. Your nature is to serve and to love Krishna. But somehow or other, since a time that we cannot trace back to, we have come under the influence of material energy of Maya. By our own free will, we have taken shelter of material energy. Daivi yeshu gunamayi mama maya duratyaya. This material nature is very, very difficult to overcome. Because under the influence of material nature, we forget our real self. We come under the control of ahankar, the false ego, where we're identifying ourselves with the temporary designations of this world, upadis. These temporary designations are the causes of all of our sufferings. But yet we want to hold on to them, hold on to them, even at the cost of committing sinful activities, which perpetuates and increases our miseries, trying to hold on to an illusion. Lord Chaitanya told Sanatana Goswami that when you lose your original consciousness, it is very, very difficult to revive it. Now, in this particular purport, Srila Prabhupada explains, specifically from the verse of Srimad Bhagavatam that we are reading, that our original Krishna consciousness can never be lost. It is eternal. The nature of a Mahabhagavat is he sees everything and everyone in its relationship with Krishna. He sees that every living being is serving Krishna better than me. Such a transcendental state of consciousness. But when our original consciousness is forgotten, it is said to be lost. For all practical purposes, it is gone because it has no practical value in our life. If you have a vast treasure, but you do not know where it is, you have no access to it. Even though it's there, it's really not lost. But it has no value to you. So you will weep, you will cry, you will search for it because you will think it is lost. But it isn't. It's there. Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu explained that there is only one way of finding that treasure of the original consciousness of within our heart. It can never be found through knowledge. No. Never. It can only be found by the mercy of Krishna.
Therefore, Krishna says in Gita, this material nature is very difficult to overcome, but one who surrenders to me can easily cross beyond it. No one else.
Sanatana Goswami gave the example of an astrologer, Sarvajna, who was an all-knowing sage. And he met a suffering, poor man. He told the suffering, poor man that your father was an immensely wealthy man, and he has left you inheritance to his entire estate. There is a vast, vast treasure that is yours. But you have forgotten your relation with your father, and you forgot where, you don't know where that treasure is. This is the condition of every conditioned soul in this world.
Aham bija pratapita.
Krishna says to us that we are his children. He is the seed-giving father of every living being. We are the inheritors of the vast unlimited wealth of God. We have a place in the spiritual world with God where all the transcendental energies of the Lord are there for us to enjoy with God. But we have forgotten. It is lost. The astrologer told this poor man that I can give you knowledge which will give direction, but that alone will not bring that treasure back to you. You must follow the instructions that we give. And then he told that if you dig in your father's estate, if you dig on the southern side, then wasps and drones will come out from the ground and bite you and sting you. If you dig on the western side, a ghost will come and haunt you, harass your mind. If you dig on the northern side, a big black serpent will devour you. But if you just take a little dirt from the eastern side, you will find the pot of the treasure of your father's in great wealth. The southern side represents the path of karma kanda, fruitive activities, following some religious principles, perhaps for the purpose of sense gratification, to improve the quality of our materialistic enjoyment. Factually, that's the reason most people follow religion. But Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said the result? Sense gratification creates attachment,
perpetuates desires, and therefore brings about terrible sufferings. Because as you become attached to something, it's painful when it disappoints you. Have you ever seen someone who thinks they're in control of another person's life, and then when they disobey you, it's just too much, unbearable? Because we're not the controller. To think you're the controller will cause you too much suffering, because you're not. When you become attached to a thing, then that means you think you're the proprietor, but you're not. Therefore, when it's taken away from you, or when it breaks, or when it doesn't work properly, it really causes terrible distress. So the wasps of material enjoyment will come. Actually, bees sound very nice. So nice. But then when they sting you, then you realize it's not worth the nice sound. So we're being stung perpetually, birth after birth after birth, by the miseries of material existence. So therefore, do not look in that direction. Sarvagya told the poor man, the direction of the path of sense gratification. It will cause you terrible pain. And if you go to the western side, that represents the system of Ashtanga Yoga, the system of mysticism, trying to attain higher supernatural powers. There is a ghost, a yaksha, that will haunt you. To think I am very powerful, I am very great. And distract you from finding the real treasure. And please do not go to the northern side, because that represents the path of impersonal liberation. Where you are thinking that by following religious principles I can become God. Losing your spiritual identity, forgetting your eternal relationship as the servant of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, is like being swallowed by a gigantic black serpent. Very difficult. The eastern side represents the Upasana Khanda, the path of devotional service or bhakti. Even a little endeavor on that path of accepting the principle that I am Krishna's servant, with humility, with sincerity, to just try to please Krishna, to just try to serve Krishna, then Krishna, who favors his devotee, reveals that treasure to us by his own sweet will. The treasure of our original consciousness has been hidden, and it can only be revealed to us by the mercy of the Lord. The path of bhakti is the process of attracting the mercy of the Lord. It's our only hope. Through bhakti, through devotional service, the great treasure of our original consciousness is revealed. In that treasure, we understand our constitutional nature, which is to love, pure, unalloyed, ecstatic love of Krishna. And then Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu explains to Sanatana Goswami in vast detail the nature of that love. Scientifically, systematically, how that love develops, the qualities and characteristics of Krishna prema, pure love of God, in this world and in the spiritual world. The various attributes, the various stimulants which increase the varieties of pleasures that Krishna experiences through our love and that we experience through Krishna's love. And once understanding these things, how could we ever feel that there is anything else worth striving for in our life? So please take very seriously what is spoken in this word. When one deviates from his original consciousness, he loses the capacity to remember his precious position or recognize his present one. When remembrance is lost, all knowledge acquired is based on a false foundation. When this occurs, learned scholars consider that the soul is lost. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, Lord Sri Krishna, Lord Sri Ramchandra, all the avatars and all the true acharyas have taught us this simple truth. To wake up. To not build our reality on an illusion. In this age of Kali, there is only one way, according to the revealed scriptures, that we can perfectly awaken our original consciousness. And that is the chanting of Krishna's holy name. In Srila Prabhupada's introduction to the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra, he begins in this way. Krishna consciousness is not an artificial imposition on the mind. It is the original, natural consciousness of every living being. But somehow or other, we have forgotten. In that forgetfulness, we come under the controls of material illusion. But this chanting of the names of the Lord connects us to the spiritual energy of the Lord. And it awakens that great treasure of pure devotional service within our heart. So we are not chanting, we are not serving for any other purpose ultimately than awakening that love. Is there any questions?
Hare Maharaj, you talked about how material education or material knowledge can be taken and utilized without taking shelter. And thanks to Prabhupada, we have now faith in the Vedic scriptures. But there are also some sub-religious principles. Either it is Ayurveda, Shastra for health, or astrological or Jyoti Shastra for future prediction, and Vastu Shastra for some situation at home, etc. And because of having faith in the scriptures, and this is also coming from the Vedic scriptures, there is a tendency to develop faith, and it leaves a strong scar on the heart of devotees, and their faith, even to the extent of their faith in the Krishna consciousness being disturbed. And you don't know, as waves of time moves, various different sub-religious principles keep coming and going. How to make sure that while understanding that they are also Vedic scriptures, not be influenced and maintain fixed what should be the line of demarcation, so that we can always fix our consciousness at the feet of the Lord.
Trigunya Vishaya Veda Nistrigunya Babajana Nirudvanvo Nitya Shatyavishto Niyogakshema Atmapan. Krishna answers your question. It's in Bhagavad Gita. The Vedic literatures mainly deal with the three modes of material nature. Give them up, Arjuna. Be transcendental to all of them. Surrender to me. Sarva dharman puritya mam ekam sharanam braja. Aham tvam sarva papibhyo moksha ishami masucha. The Vedas teach all different types of dharma. Krishna says, give them all up, abandon all varieties of dharma, and just surrender to me. We have just heard what Lord Chaitanya said. Don't look in the northern, southern, or western direction. They're all places that the Vedas teach us to go. Karmakanda, go there, go there, go there, and the wasp will bite you. Haribo. Of course, the Karmakanda division doesn't talk about the wasps biting you. They'll tell you about, you can have a nice, beautiful wife and a handsome, wealthy husband. You can have a vast estate. You can have power and control over so many servants. And when you die, you can enter into the heavenly abode of Indra, or maybe Chandra, or even Surya. But in the end, whether you have a beautiful wife, a handsome, noble husband, or whether you live in a beautiful estate, or Indra Loka, up to Brahma Loka, the bees will sting you, and you will suffer miserably. Haribo. So that's what happens when you follow that division of the Vedas. And the Astanga portion of the Vedas, you'll be haunted by ghosts. And the Jnanakanda division of the Vedas, you'll be devoured by snakes. So Krishna is telling us very clearly in Gita, in Bhagavatam, Dharma Prochita Kaita Vatra. Vedavyas wrote all these Vedic literatures you're talking about, and he was miserable. Haribo. He was sitting in Badrika Ashram on the bank of Saraswati thinking, I've failed. Why? Why? Why am I feeling so much anguish in my heart? And then Narada Muni appeared and said, because you've cheated all these people. Kaitava Dharma. You've given them so much cheating religion. Until you teach people the glorious activities of Lord Sri Krishna, until you teach pure unalloyed devotional service without any trace of any other goal in life, then people will not find real satisfaction in their hearts. So we could utilize various systems of Vedic knowledge, but never depend on them. We can use them in Krishna's service. Our dependency is on Krishna. We are depending on the mercy of Krishna. It is only the mercy of Krishna that can awaken your original consciousness. Your original consciousness will not be awakened even if you arrange your house perfectly according to Vastu Shastra. Your original consciousness cannot even be slightly stimulated by the topmost astrologer in all of Bharatvarsha. We can use these things, but we're not depending on them. We're depending on Krishna. We're depending on mercy. I was explaining the other night that who is a real astrologer who actually knows what he or she is really talking about? Would you like to know?
I will share the information I have received.
A real astrologer who actually knows something about the truth, if a devotee goes to them, they will say, here is your horoscope. This happened to me. I was brought in 1971 one very, very profoundly famous astrologer who was also a sadhu. He did some calculation. He said to me, if you like, I can tell you what your astrological predictions are, something of your past, what to be careful of, but before I start, I have to be honest. Nothing I say necessarily applies to you, because you're a devotee. This is the regular course of karmic nature. But when you're a devotee, when you surrender to Krishna, a devotee is under Krishna's protection, under Krishna's divine energy. Therefore, devotees never, ever underestimate or compromise the highest reality that our shelter is Krishna's mercy, not karmic situations of the past. Palmistry is a Vedic science, is it not? A palmist looked at my hand once and said, actually, I can tell you what your lines say, but they really, if you surrender to Krishna, they have no relevance. Because you're depending on Krishna's mercy. Prabhupada said, clap your hands in front of the deities. And all your lines will change. Now let's make an experiment. Look at your lines. Now, let's have kirtan and clap. Hare Krishna. Now, look at your hand. Did they change?
No, they didn't change according to my eyes. The lines look the same. But what's Prabhupada saying? He's saying your destiny is changing. These are just lines. But your actual destiny, your future, your prospects in life are changing when you clap your hands in front of the deities. Now, no palmist is going to see that. They're going to see like what you see. Looks like that. So this is a great danger. When we neophyte devotees who are very unfortunate, and you can quote me on that if you like, they hear from these various types of persons, and they put more faith in what the astrologer or the Vastu Shastri or the doctor, they put more faith in these people or the scientists than they do in Guru and the sadhus and the scriptures. Then their lives are simply controlled by karmakanda mentality. Where is sarva dharman parityajya mam ekam sharanam braja have to do with that mentality? Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur was the greatest astrologer. The high seat of astrology of Calcutta University was reserved for him when he was a young boy. And when he started preaching Krishna consciousness, he gave it up. Because he understood that the real gift to the world is not to teach them what their karmic situation is. The real gift of the world is to tell them how to get out of it by taking shelter of Krishna, by loudly chanting his holy name. But astrology is a real science, as is all of these other types of sciences in the Vedas. And therefore we respect them, but we don't put our faith in them. We don't depend on them or their teachers. We get indications from them. We get signals from them. And that can be used in Krishna's service. But if those indications and signals divert your faith away from Krishna to all of these things, then Rupa Goswami says, accept what is favorable for pure devotional service and reject what is unfavorable. That applies to everything. So if we can use these things in Krishna's service, then we should use them in Krishna's service. They give us indications, they give us certain background information that could be useful. But we're not depending on them. We are crying out for mercy. If we're chanting the holy names in a calculating way, thinking that if I chant the holy names, then this astrological constellation influence will have a better effect on me, then you've missed the point. We're chanting the holy names. Krishna, get me out of this. Take me out of all these constellations. All these astrological configurations. Does that answer your question? Any other?
Yes. Yeah. Just one more. You said that the Mahabhagavat has a vision that everyone is serving him better than him. Everyone is serving Krishna better than him. How can he see that? Because actually people are in illusion. So how does he actually feel like that, that others who are completely in illusion are serving Krishna better than him?
When you become Mahabhagavat, you will understand. You will understand these things very nicely. Because transcendental consciousness is inconceivable to our present state of consciousness. It's just the natural humility of a purified soul. Because ultimately everything is Krishna's energy. There's one energy of the Lord, Srimati Radharani. She is the pleasure potency of the Lord. But then she expands herself into Durga Devi, the material energy. And there are so many subdivisions of each energy. But ultimately the energy is one. It's like Prabhupada uses the example electrical current. There's one energy coming from the electrical powerhouse. Depending on where you connect to that current, it can create heat, it could create light, it could create cold. It can power your television set. It can do so many things for you. But it's one energy. With Parashya Shakti Vivadaiva Shruyate, but it has so many various subdivisions. So a Mahabhagavat just sees that one energy is coming from Krishna. Even the material energy he sees because it's coming from Krishna, it's spiritual. And anyone who's serving anything is ultimately serving Krishna, so I bow down to him or her. That's very difficult to understand. Therefore, the Mahabhagavat comes down to the Madhyam Adhikari level to discriminate for people's welfare. Yes, you're serving Krishna, but because you don't know, you don't understand how you're serving Krishna, you're suffering. Everyone is serving Krishna. If you serve Maya, Maya is Krishna's energy. You're serving Krishna indirectly. So everyone is serving Krishna. But if we serve in ignorance, we suffer. If we serve in knowledge, in enlightenment, we experience the wealth of that treasure of transcendental happiness. Does that answer your question? But this is theoretical. To actually have that humility comes only through purification and realization. Yes, Srinathji Prabhu?
Maharaj, you mentioned about the northern side where there is the Mayavadi or impersonalism. Having visited that side, like website, so one question always was there. They say that Aham Brahmasmi, Adi Shankaracharya says. And they say that we are part and parcel of Brahman, Supreme Brahman. Now, Supreme Brahman is without form. So then they say, you are also without form. Can you throw some light on it? Because we know they're wrong, but can you throw some light on that?
Repeat the last part, please, because I...
The first part is Brahman and we are part and parcel of Brahman.
Mm-hmm.
Then they say that because the Supreme Brahman has no form and we are part of that Supreme Brahman, therefore we have no form.
Mm.
That means the Jivatma.
Mm.
But I know that's wrong,
mm.
but I need some clarification.
Mm. The scriptures tell Lord Brahma, Ishvara Paramakrishna Sachidananda Vigraha. Krishna tells that Brahma says in this statement that Krishna's form is eternal, full of knowledge and full of bliss. Arjuna tells Krishna, you are this supreme Brahman. So to understand, and this is actually, there are thousands of slokas that can be cited from the scriptures that Lord Chaitanya Rupa Goswami, Sanatana Goswami, Jiva Goswami have extracted to establish that ultimately the Lord, His form is eternal. His pastimes are eternal. Abhajananti mamudha manu sintanamashita. Krishna says that fools deride me. They think I'm an ordinary being. So we must understand this according to the scriptures, according to the words of the great acharyas. That Krishna, when he appears in this world, he has descended to reveal his transcendental pastimes, which are the pastimes of the spiritual world. In the impersonal Brahman, which Brahma Samhita declares to be the effulgence from the light of Krishna's body, when we enter into that state of liberation, we don't lose our identity. The jivatma remains as it is. It merges, but that merging means it's simply living in a sleeping state within that condition of Brahman. But the jivatma is still a separate, independent, living being. The Mayavadis say if you put a drop of water into the ocean, it becomes the ocean. This has no practical common sense. Why do people fall for this stupidity? The drop of water becomes the ocean? The molecular substance of that drop is still a drop. Does the molecule of the drop become the entire ocean? No. The ocean is so many millions and billions and trillions of drops. No one drop is the whole ocean. Isn't that true? If the drop became the ocean, then you couldn't take a drop back out of it. Every time you couldn't take anything out of the ocean. You'd have to even take all or nothing. But the fact you can take a drop out of the ocean means the drop is never the ocean. The drop is always a drop within the ocean. So similarly, the Supreme Brahman is unlimited, innumerable living entities who are all effulgent particles of Krishna lighting up the spiritual sky. But it's all emanating from Krishna. Krishna's eternal form. So Arjuna says, Param Brahma, Param Dhamma. You are the Supreme Brahman. And Krishna says in Gita, Brahmanohi Pratishtaham. I am the source of Brahman. And Bhagavad Gita happens to be spoken in the Mahabharata, which is meant for less intelligent people, to just teach things very simply and plainly. If Krishna wanted to say that my body is a temporary manifestation in the mode of goodness of the impersonal supreme existence of Brahman, he would have told us that. But Krishna says, Janma karma chame divyam evam yoviti tattva tatyakva deham punarma naiti mameti soja. One who understands the transcendental nature, the transcendental nature of my birth, my activities in this world, they attain my abode. Krishna has a transcendental form. His pastimes are transcendental. His abode is transcendental. So therefore, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and our acharyas, Ramanujacharya, Madhvacharya, Vishnu Swami, Balabhacharya, ultimately even Shankaracharya himself, they all taught us this principle, that one of the greatest obstacles to attaining the real treasure of love of God is to misconceive that the Absolute is impersonal, or to misconceive that the Jivatma is impersonal. So we must be very conscious of this Achintya Bheda Bheda system, that we are inconceivably simultaneously one with God, but we are always different in that we are apart. Impersonalism really doesn't make sense. We have desire. Where is that desire coming from? The impersonal philosophy says the ultimate goal of life is to annihilate for the rest of eternity all desire. But what the Vaishnavas tell, and the Vaishnava scriptures, is annihilate the misconception of the false ego, and actually purify your real desire. The desire to render transcendental loving service to the Supreme Personality of God. That is the perfect healthy state of consciousness. Yes, Mahaprabhu?
Raj, for me to understand, difficult to understand even the this impersonal part, but I am going back to the first question of Radha Gopinath Prabhu has asked. I want little miss asking one question from that if we are devotee of Lord Krishna, then we can take guide from all those things, and our life should not be guided by that type of, whether it is Jyotish or Vastu Shastra. But sometimes we have been asked by our family people, relations, we are not on the stage of fully surrender. And till the time we are not fully surrender, we have to follow also this Vastu Shastra and astrology and all that thing. So your Krishna consciousness, we have no objection, but this also should go simultaneously. So I really want little clarification on this subject.
What is your question?
Question is this, that we are not pure devotee, we are not fully surrender, so we have to follow Vastu Shastra, we have to follow astrology, whether we should follow or we should not follow.
You can follow to the extent it is favorable for devotional service, if you want to make progress on the path of devotional service. What we are speaking is not the perfectional stage. What we are speaking is the process of attaining, of gradually evolving toward the perfectional stage. When Krishna says, Sarva Dharman Parityajya, abandon all varieties of religion and just surrender to me, he doesn't have to tell that to someone who's already surrendered. Manmanabhavamadbhakto, always think of me, become my devotee. He doesn't have to tell that to someone in the spiritual world. They're already doing it. These are instructions for people who are suffering in this world who want to attain the perfection of His loving service. So we should understand this carefully. Sarva Dharma and Parijaya is not for the liberated souls. It's for you and me. That's how we become such a liberated soul. By having faith in His words. We must develop faith in Krishna. We must associate with people who have faith in Krishna. Not people who put their faith in all of these diversions from Krishna. So yes, to understand some materialistic aspects of our life and of our present circumstances and perhaps what our future will be, we can take some guidance from these various sciences. But we shouldn't let them rule or control our lives. Otherwise, we'll never get out of that syndrome. Ultimately, we're chanting the holy names because we want to transcend the modes of material nature. We don't want to stay within this realm that they're telling us about. Factually, in the Vedic scriptures, even in the four Vedas, there's so many descriptions of yajñas. In Vrindavan, when Srila Prabhupada writes in Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita, that when he installed the deities of Krishna Balaram, Radha Shyam Sundar, and Gaura Nitai, he invited very highly qualified, famous Brahmins to perform days and days of yajñas, very integral, technical yajñas to invoke auspiciousness. That's all from the Vedas. Is it not? But what did Prabhupada say? He said the real installation of Krishna Balaram was the simple devotees doing Harinam Sankirtan. That's what invited Krishna to come. He said we only had these Brahmins doing days and days of yajñas, spending vast quantities of money, only for the sake of the public, so that they would consider our temple to be authorized. But we know that that really had nothing to do with it. The real calling of Krishna Balaram was the sincere devotees just on the side of the temple chanting the holy names. Why does Prabhupada say that in his books? For obvious reason. He doesn't want any of his followers to ever be distracted from the path of pure devotion. We're depending on Krishna. We're depending on Krishna's mercy. We're depending on the Vaishnavas. According to the higher standards of the scriptures, it may say that in your house, you put this here and you put that there and you put this here, otherwise so many problems will come. But you do all those things, your house is still a deep, dark well, according to Prahlad Maharaj. But if you put the deity of Krishna in your house, and you invite the devotees to place the dust of their feet in the house, which makes your house a tirtha, and you're chanting the holy names of Allah, then your house becomes Vaikuntha. Harivo, Vaikuntha, the spiritual world. Which is better? To have an auspicious, mundane, deep, dark well, or to live in Vaikuntha? Harivo. So really, it's a matter of the heart. It's not just a matter of all these mechanical processes. Bhakti is a matter of the heart. If we're sincerely in the mood of service, if we're sincerely crying out for Krishna's mercy, if we're sincerely trying to serve Krishna's servants, then we're going to attract divine spiritual energy coming from Krishna. And that power can take us back home, back to Godhead. So if your family members say, I'm not so advanced, we're not against these Vedic sciences. We're not against them. But we are against, in our own lives, diverting our consciousness away from completely depending on the mercy of Krishna. We have faith. I doubt if Haridas Thakur arranged his cave in such a way that everything... He was just totally depending on Krishna coming from the chanting of the holy names. Now, if you arrange your house, that's nice, that's fine, no problem. According to these... But, what is the purpose? If it helps us to chant the holy names, that's good, but our dependence is on the holy names. Otherwise, the great tragedy is Guru tells you to do something and you check with your astrologer to see if it's all right. Srimad Bhagavatam tells you to do something and you check with your Shastri to see if it's all right. That is danger. And many devotees fall into that danger. So yes, Prabhupada would consult with astrologers, but only at the very end of his transcendental pastimes. Other than that, he didn't care so much. But in the very end, he was checking. And he'd check so many, and so many would tell different things. And sometimes he would follow, and then another time he would say, we're just depending on Krishna. Just to teach us. Another time an astrologer came in Prabhupada's, as he was coming in, Prabhupada told Abhiram Prabhu, now we'll have a good laugh. So Prabhupada took some advice, he took some direction, but he didn't have faith in it. He had faith in Guru and Krishna. And what direction complemented, ornamented, and helped to execute Krishna consciousness, he accepted that. Otherwise, he left it. Does that make sense? So yes, these things can help us in certain circumstances, with certain direction and guidance, but don't depend on them. We are depending on the pure devotees, the pure acharyas. There's also the Western materialistic sciences. Prabhupada was very careful. He said very revolutionary, extreme things just to break our faith in what they were trying to do to us. But because material sciences, they also speak many things that are correct on the material plane. Isn't that true? Because actually, these sciences of the Vedas, astrology, Vastu Shastra, mystic yoga, Ayurveda, these are all material sciences, my friends. They're not spiritual sciences, they're material sciences that can be helpful to elevate us on the material platform, and they can also help facilitate us in spiritual life. But the real spiritual science is sarva dharma parityajya, to abandon everything else and surrender to Krishna. Is that true, Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu? So he could be a great Ayurvedic doctor and heal people's bodies so wonderfully, but then they're going to die. And I doubt if they remember him at the time of death. So what has he done for them? He's done some pious work. But if through his Ayurvedic profession, if he understands the real goal of my life is to get people faith in the holy name of Krishna, then he's actually doing the highest service to humanity. Then it becomes spiritual. The Vedas are filled with material sciences, and outside of the Vedas there's so many material sciences. Is there not? But material sciences cannot take you beyond the material realm of ignorance. They can be used, but they must be used with faith in Krishna, with faith in the principle of bhakti. Prabhupada said, whether they went to the moon or whether they didn't go to the moon, it's not going to solve the problems of birth, old age, disease, and death. So we really don't care. The Americans promote, we went to the moon, we put our flag in the moon. American flag flying in the moon. But even if it is there, who's looking at it? Who cares? They spent billions and billions of dollars to bring back some rocks. Are those rocks helping to cure anyone from the disease of birth, old age, disease, and death? Are they solving the wars in the world? Who cares? So yes, these are big, big sciences. Prabhupada often said they didn't go to the moon. Just to challenge us. What do you care for these things? Don't have faith in these things. Have faith in Krishna. Whether they went or didn't go, it's not going to solve the problem of birth, old age, disease, and death. Nor are any of the sciences, medical sciences, even the information technology sciences that India is so famous for, not going to solve the problem of birth and death. Not even astrology or any of these things could ever solve the problem of birth, old age, disease, and death. Yes, the only thing that will solve is implicit faith in Guru and Krishna. That's all. Anything that diverts our attention from implicit faith in our Guru Parampara and Krishna is a diversion. When we have implicit faith, the essence of all the Vedas are revealed. Yes? That is what Parampara means. Krishna's infallible word descending. So yes, we can use computers. We can use the lighting system, which is a scientific technology. We can use astrology, Vastu Shastra, all these things we can use. But we don't need them. We don't require them. But we can use them. But for what? For the service of the Lord. But service to the Lord has substance when there's faith in the word of Krishna. According to Vishnu Purana, wherever the devotees are chanting the holy names, everything becomes all auspicious.
Haribo. So if you want to invoke real auspiciousness, transcendental auspiciousness, where the presence of the all-auspicious Lord is manifested, then it will only come through our faith that Krishna is non-different than His name, and we take shelter. We do not want to divert our attention to take shelter of anything. That will not increase our enthusiasm and our implicit faith in Guru and Krishna's order to always chant His holy name.
Hare Krishna, Krishna, Krishna.
A good Vastu Shastri, he'll tell you this is where this is. But actually, if you're worshipping the deities and you're inviting devotees and you're doing devotional service, your house is Vaikuntha. That's honesty.
Maharaj, people will call us crazy if we start talking like this to the 99% of the people in the society who are completely dependent on the material science and they don't have that much faith in the holy name. They call you guys are crazy.
Prabhu, it is Krishna's words. We're not crazy. Krishna's crazy. We're just repeating what Krishna says. Our role in this world is not to be popular amongst the ignorant. Our role in this world is to enlighten the ignorant. But does what we speak make logical sense? Is it based on philosophy? Is it based on scripture? Is it based on logic? Is it based on practical way of living? Then why you say it's crazy? Your so-called sciences are not based on scripture, not the essence of scripture. Are they based on real philosophy, on real logic, and do they have a practical application? How can you say crazy? We're not fanatics. We explain things according to Shastra, according to philosophy, and according to basic common sense. That is not crazy. That is real. So we must speak these things in such a way that is convincing. And if people call us crazy, we will take that as a compliment. Haribo. Yes.
Hello. Maharaji, you told us in your concourse that the path of bhakti is the ultimate goal that one should follow. But isn't the knowledge, jnana, would help to elevate ourselves in the path of bhakti? So wouldn't jnana be also very important to catalyst our bhakti and the higher form of bhakti?
Bhakti includes jnana, but our development of jnana should be in pursuit of bhakti. Is there jnana in Bhagavad Gita? Is there a higher gyan than the teachings of Bhagavad Gita? But every word of Bhagavad Gita is teaching bhakti. Is there gyan in Vishnu Purana, in Vedanta Sutra, in Srimad Bhagavatam? But all that gyan is leading us to pure bhakti. Vairagya vidya nija bhakti yoga. That renunciation and knowledge are included within bhakti. Vasudevi, what is that? Bhagavati bhakti yoga prayojata. Jnana vairagya yukta. That jnana and knowledge are byproducts of bhakti. They are in pursuit of bhakti. When you have real bhakti, automatically you attain the perfection of knowledge and renunciation. So yes, knowledge is important. So much philosophy is in Gita, Bhagavatam. Did you ever read the works of Madhvacharya, Ramanujacharya, Jiva Goswami? The deepest, most profound philosophy ever presented to mankind is by these acharyas. But it only has one purpose. To teach us about the Supreme Personality of God and how to serve Him and how to love Him. So yes, we must have knowledge. But that knowledge is in pursuit of pure devotional service. Does that answer your question?
Yes, Maharaji. But we have to apply that knowledge and read that knowledge to understand, I feel that, to go higher in the path of bhakti. Because that is the knowledge.
Well, there are 9 principles of bhakti. Beginning with sravanam, kirtanam, Vishnu. Sravanam means hearing. Hearing means acquiring knowledge. Does it not? This is one of the paths of bhakti, hearing. To read books is shravanam, hearing. But what are we reading? If we are reading impersonalistic commentaries, then we're not acquiring, that is not bhakti. We're hearing, but it is not bhakti. But when we're reading the words of Shukadeva Goswami to Maharaj Pariksit with commentaries that are actually telling the essence, Maharaj Pariksit did not desire to merge into the impersonal Brahman. He desired to go back home, back to Godhead. Yes? So, yes, hearing, cultivation of knowledge is part of bhakti when we are hearing from the souls who are actually promoting bhakti. If we hear from persons who are speaking another goal, another purpose, that is not bhakti. But if we hear philosophy and knowledge from those who are actually realized and teaching us how to realize our eternal constitutional original position, then that hearing, that cultivation of knowledge is bhakti. Maharaj Pariksit begged Sukadeva Goswami, please speak knowledge to me. But what knowledge would he want? He wanted to know about Krishna. Yes? Suta Goswami told sages of Naimasharanya, Pariksit Maharaj, that because you're asking about Krishna, the subject matter of your questions and the answers are for the ultimate benefit for all of the world. So that is bhakti. We have classes every day to give knowledge. But what knowledge? not yatamatatapat knowledge, that anything you do, it'll bring you to the same goal. Krishna himself in Gita, yanti devavata devam. So if you worship demigods, you'll go to demigods. If you worship the ancestors, you'll go to the ancestors. If you worship the spirits, you'll go to the spirits. If you worship me, you will come to me. It's not that anybody you worship, anything you do, you go to the same place. This is a bogus concoction that has no authority on any scripture. But it's one of the most common so-called philosophies in India today. And people like it. It's very popular. Anything I do, if I meditate on this light bulb, or if I meditate on the deity, or if I meditate on a demigod, or if I meditate on a cockroach, ultimately I'll attain the same goal. So worship me. Is Krishna sectarian? Krishna's not sectarian. Krishna's the supreme absolute truth. All the demigods are emanating from him. He's the origin of everything that exists. So when you worship Krishna, you, Srimad Bhagavatam says it's like putting water on the root of the tree. Every part of the tree, every demigod, every devata, even the light bulbs and the cockroaches, everyone will be satisfied if you worship Krishna. Because he's the source of everything. He's nourishing everyone. He's empowering everything and everyone everywhere. So if we're going to cultivate knowledge, we should cultivate the right knowledge. That is why there is parampara, evam parampara, Krishna says, that you should receive knowledge through the proper system. Otherwise, people just, for the sake of popularity, create so many systems of ideas. That you do this meditation and you will become God. I am God, and you will become God. We are all God, we are all... So many people speak like this. But what is the practical reality of it? If I'm God, why am I like this? If I'm God, why in the middle of class I'm running to bathrooms? God is Sarveshwareshwara. He's the controller of all controllers. Arivo. If you're God, why are you growing old? Krishna says, I am time. So if you're time, you control yourself. I have forgotten I'm God. Actually, I have forgotten. But through my spiritual practices, then I will remember, I will realize I'm God. Well, what an offensive mentality toward God. How could God forget that he's God? God is all-knowing. What do you think, Ajay? Does God forget that he's God? If God forgets that he's God, then forgetfulness is greater than God, so we should worship forgetfulness. But God can never forget. Vedaham samatitani bharatamanani charjuna. Krishna says, I know everything past, present, and future. I know everything. I know everyone. That is God. Why should we bring God to such an impotent position that I am God, but I have forgotten? And you are God, but you have forgotten. Because we are infinitesimal particles of God, we have the capacity to forget. But God does not forget. He is the supreme controller, the supreme master. We are his eternal servants. And when we miss our use, our free will, we come under the control of his material energy. Krishna says, Mayadhyakshena prakriti.
I am the controller of material energy. But we're all being controlled by material energy, are we not? You get sick, you're under the control of material energy. So many things you want cannot be fulfilled due to the limitations of material energy. When Krishna appeared in this world, he showed who is God. Krishna enjoyed with gopis. So there are people who want to enjoy with gopis. See, Krishna is doing, I will do. But before Krishna enjoyed with gopis, he lifted Giriraj, Govardhan, with his left hand. Small finger, 7 days. Do that first. Go ahead, go to Vrindavan, lift Govardhan Hill, hold it up 7 days. Then we'll take you seriously when you say that I am God. God never becomes God. God is always God. So when people teach all of these things, you are God, I am God, ultimately all these forms are illusion. We all merge into the oneness of Brahman. We should understand that this may be a particular misinterpretation of a particular science of the Vedas, but it is not bhakti. And it's a very vast distraction from bhakti. We don't want to be God, we want to love God. That is our original constitutional position. So if we cultivate knowledge that nourishes these truths within our heart, that is bhakti. Therefore, Krishna says we should hear from Parampara. We should hear his words from those who have surrendered their lives to him. Haribo, does that answer your question?
Yes, Maharaji, very well.
So yes, you should cultivate knowledge more and more and more from the proper sources with the proper direction. Lord Chaitanya told Sanatana Goswami that the Vedas deal with sambandha, abhideya, and prayojana. Sambandha is to establish our relationship with Krishna, and it is very important. Tadvidi pranipatena, we inquire submissively from the proper spiritual masters to get knowledge of what we're supposed to do, who we are in life. That is sambandha. To understand who is Krishna, what is my relationship with Krishna? Why am I suffering in this world? That is sambandha jnana. To establish that we are the eternal servants of Krishna. And then we put that into our life and we gain realization, experience. Thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.